So the reading is from Acts chapter 9, verses 1 to 9. It'll probably be on the wall, so yes it is. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything.
Okay, the importance of St. Paul. I just happen to be a Paul as well. My parents were thoughtful. Now, slide number 2, what we know about Paul. Paul's Hebrew name was Saul, and he was born in Tarsus, a city in present-day Turkey. Now, there's quotes there for Acts and that. I won't go through them all, otherwise you'll be here all day. So you can take it as read as on the screen. Paul calls himself a Hebrew or Israelite, stating that he was born a Jew and circumcised on the 8th day of the Jewish tribe of Benjamin. He was once a member of the sect of the Pharisees, so he was well-educated in terms of God, a righteous man in terms of God, a righteous Jew in terms of God. He was born a Roman citizen, which means his father also was a Roman citizen. So he had respect in the society he lived in. He had some official status as a witness consenting to the death of Stephen, the first follower of Jesus to be executed. He received a commission from the high priest in Jerusalem to travel to Damascus in Syria to arrest, imprison, and even have executed any followers of Jesus. So here was a guy with great intent to act for God because he felt that the followers of Jesus were blasphemers in full. They were worshipping what the Jews saw as a criminal who died on a cross. So Paul had might and right on his side. His mission was to defend the God of Abraham and David, and to eradicate blasphemers. He zealously persecuted the Jesus movement. So what a guy. What tenacity, what strength of character. He was a God warrior. Who wouldn't want to be on his team? But then, this happened. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." So this happened sometime around AD 37. Paul had his experience on the road to Damascus. He describes it as seeing Jesus and received from him his gospel message, as well as his call to be an apostle to the non-Jewish world, the barbarians, or the Gentiles. From here, we see an awesome and dramatic change in Paul. Because up to that, he was on the right side of God, doing his best for God, because he thought God needed the warrior class to kill anyone who wasn't a God follower. And that was the early Christians. So quite a dramatic change for Paul. Remember, he was on the winning side. He had nothing to lose on the winning side. And yet he changed fully. He was a rising star in his community. He had a bright future ahead of him. He had status, respect, and future reward, especially with God. So that tenacity, that strength of character I've mentioned, that got turned and twisted and came into its own as Paul changed. And he sought to glorify God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit following the experience on the road to Damascus. So following this shortly, Ananias baptized Paul on the instructions of God. Paul spent some time with the disciples in Damascus, a short time, and then he met with the apostles in Jerusalem. And that was through Barnabas. He had to go to Arabia following that because he was under threat, having changed sides fully. The Pharisees in particular were very insulted and annoyed, and so he had to leave. He went to Arabia for up to 3 years, meditating, maybe studying, and discussing his new belief. And then he returned in full flow. He preached the death, resurrection, and lordship of Jesus Christ, and he proclaimed that faith in Jesus which guarantees a share in the life ahead in heaven. Paul expanded the church far and wide, flinging open the doors to the Gentiles, to the barbarians, to you and me, strenuously fighting for his conviction that the gospel was for all people, that no barrier should be put in the way of people who were trying to believe. Paul, the theologian, was the first to work through many of the intriguing questions that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection had thrown up. It was an unknown, it was a first, it was crazy stuff to believe. A criminal executed on a cross turns out to be the Son of God, the Triune God. And Paul, the letter writer, gave us some of the most profoundest pieces of early Christian theological reflection in his writings, and also some of the finest, most poignant stories in history, which changed man's history. What a guy. Next slide, Bob. Thank you, you're ahead of me. Paul's letters. He wrote to communicate with distant churches, to encourage, to cajole, to inform, and to respond to events that he had heard about. So definitely the first seven on the top there, they're definitely Paul. There's 13 in total associated with Paul in the New Testament, which is quite a sizable amount of the New Testament. The maybe Pauls are those who theologians at the moment are debating as to their connection with Paul. It could have been followers of Paul, very close associates of Paul, who wrote down Paul's words. And then on the last, Timothy and Titus, they're not sure, could be students far removed from Paul who are putting it into words. So that's Paul's letters. But what a guy to write. And then travel. Okay, without Google and without a motor car, he travels 10,000 miles proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. He has 4 journeys in total, which ends in Rome. But those journeys took him through Israel, Syria, Turkey, and Greece, ending in Rome, where he was executed under Nero. So for a man to go that far with his belief, he gets executed for that belief. Having been on the winning side, he's now on a side which is outrageous to most of the Jews. And to the Romans, it's a thorn in their side, this new belief. So they execute him in Rome. Some of the dangers he experienced in his travels, quoted from the Bible here. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I passed a night and a day on the deep, on frequent journeys, in dangers from the rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my own race, dangers from Gentiles, dangers in the cities, dangers in the wilderness, dangers at sea, in toil, in hardship, through many sleepless nights, through hunger and thirst, frequent fastings, through cold and exposure. What's not to like about this guy? Now that is courage. He goes from the safety of where he was to this strange belief which he promoted through the land. Oops. Now his many strengths. While he's on his travels, he creates many house churches in places like Corinth and Ephesus and Philippi. He was a powerhouse among the apostles, and remember, he never met Jesus except on the road to Damascus. The apostles had the benefit of being with Jesus, experiencing his actions, and enjoying his company. Paul didn't have that. And yet he becomes, in our parlance, he becomes a super apostle because of where he's coming from. So for us in particular, and it would have happened anyway under God's guidance. Remember, all of this is under God's guidance. While Paul is doing the work on the ground, behind it is God and Jesus. So Paul gets to rebuke Peter in the early stages on the issue of Gentile believers. And because of that rebuke and Paul's experience with Cornelius, the Roman centurion, things start to change among the direction of the early church. where non-Jews had to conform to the Jewish system of belief, circumcision, and various other matters of fasting and prayer. And Paul made that change and operated fully with the apostles as that change grew. So he made the radical departure of preaching to non-Jews, saying that through Jesus, God had extended salvation to the Gentiles. So a remarkable guy who never met him really, talking to people who grew and were with Jesus, grew their faith through Jesus personally. And here he is teaching from a different book. But they're all going the same way. So Paul has played a crucial role in the development of the early church and is regarded by many as a second founder of the Christian movement. There are some theologians who nowadays debate who really founded the church. Was it Jesus or was it Paul? But all theologians agree it's God, it's Jesus, and Paul is just at the background working on the behalf of God. So could it be said that you and I are here today because of Paul's work? Certainly. But God is behind it. So let me tell you a little story. This is where it gets a little bit personal, so I hope I don't bore you. For a long time, I had no belief. I was born and raised a Catholic, Roman Catholic. You didn't question the priest. He read to you and preached to you, so you had no authority in the church, except whatever he said, that was it. You never crossed him. As a teenager then, I fell out of belief. As a 20-year-old, I certainly dropped out altogether. Now, God was somewhere in the system, because I did believe in moral right and a higher creation that was probably in control of all of this, but not the God and not the God of the Bible. And then I met, luckily to meet my wife Lizzie, Presbyterian. I didn't know too many Presbyterians because they never waved their, up to me. So I meet Lizzie, and slowly but surely, out of respect to her parents, I attend Presbyterian Church in Enniscorthy, which was a change, really good change, except they used to play a gramophone in the back of the church when it was time for hymns, and they'd put on an old LP, and it would scratch at the back, and silently I'd be on. And then they were mostly out of tune from the music or the hymn that was been said as well, which was strange to me. So anyway, I thought this was very quaint, very nice. Most people were very gentle and caring. We moved into Bray, and we came here to Greystones, and luckily we met Jim Carson, who welcomed us with open arms, and the congregation did as well. And slowly but surely, through osmosis, my faith started to come back, but not to any great extent, but just a happiness and a comfort. Coming to church was good. The people were good in general. Like, we all make mistakes and we're all sinners, but we're good. So Jim retired and Dave Montgomery took over. And Monty said to me one of the days, why don't you do a Christianity Explored course? And I said I would. But Monty, be advised, I'd be very careful with the people that I'm attending with, but I'm going to tell them it's all a load of nonsense. It's a lovely story, it's great guidance, but that's all it is, and to believe it any further is crazy. So I did. I went on the first night, I said exactly that, and Monty's away in the corner praying for me and the others, and Gwen arrived and also prayed, and I didn't know it, but their prayer was active, and it was happening. So the first night, and I said to Monty, I'll only attend the first night, more than likely I won't attend further, because it's a crazy, I mean, we haven't seen this guy for 2,000 years. Yeah. So Monty said, as you wish. So first night, I actually enjoyed it, the debate, the banter. Nobody insulted me by my non-belief. And then some of us were struggling in our belief anyway, so that was fine. So I said to myself, I'll give it another go. So that another go became 6 weeks. And as the 6 weeks through, we were studying Mark, I started to read the Bible like I'd never read it before. And usually, as a Catholic, you weren't allowed to read it the way I was. It had to be guided to you, in case you misinterpreted the whole thing. So I started to read and read and search. I suddenly realized there was something missing in my belief structure. And I searched and I searched and I began to believe. But not to the extent, again, to where I am right now. Here I am talking to you about it. I was very close to the full Monty on it. Sorry, Monty. And I read Paul. Now, I'm a retired member of the Garda Síochána, so most of my life has been spent in investigation. where you follow the evidence or you follow the money and it leads you to the truth. Now, you may not prove it in a court of law, but it leads you to the truth. So here I am, searching and searching. I find Paul, and I'm thinking, this guy is on the winning side. It's like, why should he change? Why should he write and tell us? He should be telling us about how many Christians he's killed on behalf of God because they're an insult to God. And I'm thinking, he gave up everything. He ends up, as I've already read, in great dire danger at times. He must have been disowned by his family, his Jewish family. Here's an apostate in the group. Kick him out. Maybe he never got another hug from his parents if they did those things in those days. So what happened with him convinced me that it's all real. And here's my eureka moment. Saturday morning, in bed, waking up, Lizzie is drawing the curtains. I wake up and I say, and I don't know where it's coming from, but I wake up and I say, it's all true. The whole thing. And she says, what? What's true? What? The Bible, God, Jesus, Paul, the apostles, every bit of it. And Lizzie's going, what? Are you okay? And that was my eureka moment. And right in here, if I'm taken to a firing squad, right in here, I know it's true. Now, at times I cannot tell you how it's true. I can't understand how it's true. I don't know why this is happening, but it's happening. And it's happening for each of us. And if you are where I was, a non-believer, look for the belief and go to somebody like him, or the Bible, or a good preacher, or a minister, somebody who's a man of God and faith and strong in his belief, who will help you. So Paul, the last slide there. Look at this wonderful quote from Galatians. I live no longer, not I, but Christ lives in me. I believe that. And I see God in every one of us. And I see God in nature outside. And I understand that we're all connected through God. And he's the guy who put the final brick in the wall of my belief. And he works through God. And that's where it's a great story. And I'm hoping you're all believing. And if you're not, search for it. Thank you.